It's Tuesday evening, March 4th. This is Rabbi Feldman's share. Tonight's share is sponsored by Pearl and David Schachter and by Arlene and Michael Sand to commemorate the yard site of Pearl and Arlene's mother, Shendel Bas Pinchas.
Thank you very much. As we mentioned last week, we are in the zone for Purim at this point in time. We're just a few weeks away. So I'll talk about the favorite topic, that is Shalach Manush. Shalach Manush is important for Purim. It's also an interesting case study as far as Lumdus is concerned. That we're very familiar with a format, if you will, for many Lumdus Yishurim. Very often start with a chakira, some type of a general question is posed, and then look for different cases where it makes a difference one way or another, what will all be nafkamina. And Shalach Manush is a fascinating study because there is a unbelievable lockstep obedience to a certain chakira, and it's pretty fascinating the way it plays out as far as that's concerned. So it's an interesting discussion in and of itself, and it's really a testament to the influence of the Chassam Sofer, who really blazed a path in that area that everyone has to follow. So we'll talk about that a little bit. And just by way of introduction, so as we know, there essentially are four mitzvos hayom of Purim, all of which are alluded to at least directly or indirectly in Megillas Esther. And that being the case, they kind of are in between as far as status is concerned. They would seem to be mitzvos to Rabbana, mitzvos that were instituted by human beings rather than by the Torah. But at the same time, since they're mentioned in the Pesukim and the Megillas Esther, that gives them the status of Divrei Kabbalah, which we've spoken about a number of times. Divrei Kabbalah, according to the Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, is compared to Divrei Torah. And there were those who took the views, most prominently the Shaikas Aryeh and his Sefer Turi Evin in the late 1600s, that anything that's Divrei Kabbalah is treated like a mitzvah d'oraisa for all purposes. Even though the Gemara says it in a kind of a localized context, and some Rishonim assumed it only means that, but the Turi Evin came later, but was very assertive on this point, that they treated like Divrei Torah. So therefore, many poskim feel that for many intents and purposes, the mitzvahs of Purim have that type of status, as if they're mitzvahs from the Torah, and they're treated with that type of chumrah. So these four mitzvahs, of course, are the mitzvah of Kriyas HaMegillah, the mitzvah of Sudas Purim, which is the primary manifestation of the mitzvah of Simchas Purim, and Matanos Rav Yonim, and Mishloach Manos. So Mishloach Manos is an interesting discussion, as we see, as to what exactly is the purpose of the mitzvah. And again, the Chassam Sofer had a major impact on this discussion, in that he was addressing a comment of the Ramah. The Ramah, several hundred years earlier, has a psak which started a whole controversy, and a lot of the contemporaries in the latest forum objected. The Ramah says as follows. So let's say on Purim, you're about to go out on your Shalach Manos delivery trip, and you call up your friend, and you say, Shmerel, I want you to know, I'm on my way to your house to the Shalach Manos. And Shmerel says, that's wonderful, listen, that's so nice of you, but, you know, why don't you save the trip? Don't bother coming. I have so many Shalach Manos already, I can't open the door to let you in, and I'm really all full. I appreciate the thought. Stay home, enjoy the day. Says the Ramah, in such a case, the first guy, the guy who called up Shmerel, he's Yotzei. Doesn't actually give any Shalach Manos, nothing actually changed hands. Shmerel was Mochel, his Mechila, and that's effective. That's what the Ramah says, he's already Yotzei that way. And a lot of the Svarim that came afterwards, a lot of the Poskim who lived then and later, said, I don't understand why that should be. It's not what it says in my Megillah. My Megillah says, Mishloach Manos Yisroyehu. It doesn't say offering Manos. It doesn't say just mentioning Manos, because you have to go and actually give Manos. So how could you come up with such a conclusion that if somebody offers Manos, that don't actually get there, don't actually transmit it, that one should be in fulfillment of his obligation? Now it's true, there's a whole discussion in the Korban Nisano, on the bottom of the Rush, and in other Svarim, that we do have a concept called Mechila, and that Mechila, according to some possibilities, means that let's say somebody owes me $10 and I tell them it's okay, you can keep it. So some understand that to mean that it's as if I, what I'm saying is that it's as if I accepted the $10 already. I will count it as if I got it. So maybe that's what's going on here, that we have the ability to say I will consider it as if it was given. But as later Svarim point out, it's not always true. It depends on the rules, depends on the circumstances. How do we know? We need a source that this is true for Shalach Manas. It doesn't sound like it should be from the Sukkim. Where does the Rama get this from? So a couple hundred years went by until the Chassan Sofer got this question. And the Chassan Sofer says, well, we have to figure out, in analyzing whether the Rama is correct or not, we have to figure out what's the purpose of the mitzvah of Shalach Manas. What's it meant to accomplish? If we knew what it was meant to accomplish, then we would know whether Mechila works or not. So he did a little research, and he said that it seems that there's really a machlokus about this. That there are earlier sources who take up this topic, and if you put together the earlier sources, you get a machlokus on this point. But on the one hand, you have the Shmuel Sadesh, and Shmuel Sadesh, I think we mentioned a little last week, and Sadesh was a German Rishon, and in his Chuvish, he seems to say that the reason we have Shalach Manas is to help with another mitzvah of Purim. As he mentioned, one of the other mitzvahs of Purim is the Suda. People have to be able to have a meal. So we have to worry that maybe not everybody is in a position to have a festive meal on Purim. Maybe they don't have enough food. Maybe they don't have food of a fancier nature to enhance the normal type of meal. Maybe it's not going to be a good enough suda. So we have to worry about that. So we should send gifts of food in order to make sure that there's enough to go around in order to make sure that the suda is going to take place properly. So there were, that was apparently the view of the Shmuel Sadashin. And the Chassan Sofer adds that there's an opposing view in the Sefer Manos Halevi. Manos Halevi is written by Rav Shlomo Alkabetz. Rav Shlomo Alkabetz is famous for writing two things. He wrote the Lecha Dodi, so that's very well known. And a very far second on the list is this sentence that the Chassan Sofer made very famous. It's the Sefer Manos Halevi, that's Rav Shlomo Alkabetz wrote, where he seems to say that what's the reason that we have Shalach Manas? It's because we want to counteract something that comes earlier in the Megillah. That Haman, when he tells Ahasuerus that he wants to destroy the Jews, he says, Yeshna Amechad Mefuzah Mefarad, there's this scattered nations dispersed among all your people, and we should kill them. So the pasuk in the end of the Megillah, Meshalach Manas Bishlareyehu, that's meant to counteract that. That's meant to say that we're not so dispersed that we can bring ourselves back together again. That we want to try to spread Ava, the Yachlu, the Shalom, the Reyes, we want to try to spread friendship, and what's the best way to do that? So the best way to a man's heart is for the stomach, so if we send gifts of food, so people will like each other again, and that way we'll have, we'll bring everybody together, and that's going to be effective, that's going to make friends among the Jews. So this apparently was a machlokus between the Shmuel Sadesh and the Manos Halevi. So it says the Chassan Sofer, the whole issue depends on this, that if you want to know whether or not mechila is effective, so it should really go around this issue. That if you believe that the issue is making friends, so then it makes sense to say that it's really the thought that counts. That if a person knows that you were ready to do it, and you offered, and you called up, and he said, listen, it's okay, keep it, so then, you did a gesture of friendship, and that should be effective. But if the goal is that you're trying to help people with a suda, that it's a tzedakah type of idea, so then one might make the case that, and this is the way that Shmuel Sofer understands, that we can't allow mechila. We can't allow it to be that only the people who need it will take it, and the people who don't need it are not going to take it. Because nobody's going to take it. Everyone's going to be embarrassed to say that they need it. So no one will take it, and the whole institution is going to fall apart. People who are clever will just call up their rich friends and say, listen, I've got Shalach Manas for you. Oh, you don't want it? Okay, fine, I'm done. And the whole plan is not going to take place. So if that's the idea, if this is a way that's supposed to ensure that everyone has food, so then it can't be that mechila would work. We would have to actually get it to people. So that's how the Chassan Sofer understood, that it was dependent upon these two positions, and this had a tremendous impact on the whole nature of the discussion, that any issue that will ever be raised in the realm of Sahmanis over the past 200 years always starts off, well, if Sam Sofer tells us that it's from a Sadesh and a Manas Halegi, and that everything depends on that. So if somebody asks you, should I use a blue basket or a red basket for Sahmanis, they say, well, if it's a blue basket, so then it's nice and more cheerful to make friends with, but if it's a red basket, it goes better with the table. And somehow every issue, whatever it is, will somehow fit into this point. It's become an agreement that we'll always talk about this as a starting point for any discussion about Sahmanis. There was one dissenting voice of the contemporary of Chassam Sofer. His name was Reb Lazar Deutsch, who was the Rav of Dayan and Bonihad in Hungary. And he wrote Chayas and Shuvas Chalkas HaShadim and Shuvas Pri HaShadim. So he has a Shuvah in which he says he doesn't think the whole thing is correct. He doesn't think there's really a Machlokas here. That essentially they're saying the same thing, that everybody agrees that the purpose of Shalach Manish is Shalom Bereish, it's to make friends. It's just the Chumash Hadashin says that since there's a mitzvah Yom of Suda, so when you're sending gifts to make friends, you should send gifts of food, because that's the need of the day. So that's all he's saying. He's not saying anything radically different. There isn't really a machlokas here. But the Chassam Sofer was more influential, so that became the standard position, and every tshuva, every discussion after that somehow pulls on this point. And the Chassam Sofer himself continued the ball rolling a little bit further by adding in that same tshuva another issue. When he notes, this is that also affect the question, let's say you have a married woman, or you have somebody who's general, not the head of the household that he's living in, or he or she is living in, so are they also obligated in Shalach Manos? So this would also depend, that if you believe that it's about making friends, so then every individual has an obligation to make friends. So then that would seem to be the view, and that's indeed the way Ramah rules. The married women also have to, or women in general also have to bring Shalach Manos. He doesn't distinguish between married and unmarried, because it seems to be consistent with his view, that he holds like the Manos HaLevi, it's about making friends, and therefore it's a thought that counts, and therefore also, so men and women, married, unmarried, are all obligated equally. Well, if we believe that it's about helping people with the Suda, so then you can make a strong case that it's only people who have to provide for their own meal who have to provide for other people's meals. So if you're the head of the household and you're supporting your own family, you also have an obligation of Sukkot to provide other people's food, to provide other people's meals. But if you yourself receive your meals from somebody else, maybe one could argue that this obligation shouldn't apply. So that's how the Chassam Sofer understood that issue, and again, all the other issues that came after it. There was one issue that I thought maybe could be exempt from this rule, that could not be a part of this discussion, and that has to do with the following. There is a kapeda that some people have, and it's, it goes back to a discussion in the Ran a little bit, and then more at length, the Binyan Sin and others discussed. The Binyan Sin was the back of Allinger. Was the Rebbe of the Chancellor of Paul Hirsch, and in his Chuvah he discusses this topic, and that's the question of, do we believe that there is a requirement or a preference that Shalach Manos should be done through a Shliach, that he should have somebody else deliver the Shalach Manos theme. So that's an unusual type of idea. It seems to be based on the Pasuk and based again on the Sran. But the idea that you would have to have a shliach is not really precedented in halacha. We do have an idea in halacha that shlucho shalodim kamoso, that a person can sometimes, for certain dinim, have a agent represent him. But usually that's a second best. It's not the requirement. And it's actually usually the case that if you can't do it yourself, then you can't have a shliach. You can only do what you can do. So the idea that you should specifically use a messenger is a very unusual idea. So the Devar Avraham and others explain it doesn't mean shlichus in the halachic sense. This is not the shlucho shel adam kamoso. This means you should use a delivery man. You should use a representative, not the halachic type of shlichus. So even so, Binyan Sin and others in the end of the discussion didn't really think this was a requirement. And it doesn't actually seem to be me'ikra hadin. But it would seem that either way it shouldn't be affected. If this is about making friends, so you can make friends either directly or indirectly, and if it's about helping with the suit, like, yeah, it doesn't matter whether it comes through a shliach or it comes through you, you would think. Then I saw that the Sabbat Rav in his Tshuvah, so he thought it does depend. The Sabbat Rav has a discussion in Tshuvah Divriyol, where he explains why he thinks it does make a difference. You have to set up the situation in kind of an extreme way in order to understand why it should make a difference. he discusses the following scenario. Again, we'll embellish a little bit, but he basically explains it like this. He says, let's say you decide that before Purim you're going to move to Alaska, to a remote village in Alaska in the middle of nowhere. And then Purim morning, so Federal Express knocks on your igloo, and he says, I've got a package for you from your old friends from Teaneck. So they had to figure it out 2 months in advance, how to reach your igloo on time, it was the whole thing. So you're going to be very touched, you're going to appreciate there was clearly a lot of effort there to think about you, to remember you, and that's going to have a big impact on you. On the other hand, let's say you don't move out of town, you're still in Teaneck, and then per morning you happen to notice me walking in the street delivering Shalos Manos, and I bump into you, and I clearly was out delivering to other people, but I feel awkward now because I see you in the street, and I have the Shalos Manos on me, and I don't want to not give you, so I'm like, oh yeah, here, have one. So you might be a little less impressed, you know, that there's no reason to believe that you were actually singled out there. Doesn't show the same type of effort. Well, to get somebody else involved in the middle is a general rule. It's going to involve more effort. It's going to involve more forethought. So again, those are extremes. It doesn't have to be that way. But I guess as a general rule of thumb, that's the way there's a source of this in Chazal in another context, that since you got somebody else involved, that shows more attention, and that itself, maybe if it's about making friends, that's going to accomplish more. While if it's about helping with the Suda, it shouldn't really be so relevant. Hi.
Should that communicate to his friend?
Yeah, that would seem to be the case. We'll talk about that a little bit more. Right. And well, we'll come back to that point because it affects other things. But you're right about that. So that seems to be, let's take that for now as a given, and we'll come back to that in a few minutes. So then Shalos HaMarav understood that should also perhaps be affected by this question. The Ramah, again, to continue the idea of the Ramah reflecting his position in different ways, so the Ramah has another statement which also seems to draw off the same position. Purim is unique as far as Yom Tovim go, not really unique, but it's certainly contrasted with Pesach, which comes right afterwards. There's a very major difference in that Pesach is such an emphasis on the night, the Seder night when most of the mitzvot are relevant. And on Purim, it's really flipped, that most of the mitzvot are really relevant during the daytime, and even Megillah, we could discuss that, but even Megillah, there's a much greater focus on Megillah reading during the daytime. It's not sociologically the case, but philosophically it's the case that the Megillah reading during the daytime is much more of a focus than the nighttime. All the mitzvot of Purim are relevant during the daytime. So, working off of that position, the Ramah writes that when you send a Shalos Manos to somebody, so you need to make sure that it gets there on Purim day. If it gets there on Purim night, that's the wrong time. So what does that mean? What it apparently means is that if the idea is that you're trying to help out with the Suda, so then let it get there the night before, let it get there the day before, let it get there a few days before, as long as it can be used for the Purim Suda, so it doesn't have to get there on Purim itself. But if you believe that the purpose of Shalos Manos is you're trying to make friends, so when does that happen? That happens when they receive the gift and they're happy that they were thought of. So that's when this friendship is created. So that's got to happen on Purim itself, apparently when the mitzvah is relevant. But Purim has got to happen during the daytime. And that seems to reflect his view again, that if it's about making friends, why I thought that counts and why even married women have to do it. So to hear that it has to be received during the time when the mitzvah is relevant, specifically during the day. And again, if you took a different view that's about the Suda, you wouldn't seem to have this type of requirement. And this is a Behetev in the bottom of the Shulchan Aruch, has a whole discussion along similar lines. What about, so say you live in Israel, you want to send to somebody in Yerushalayim, outside Yerushalayim, 1450, you can have all kinds of complicated timing issues. So there seems to be, based on the Ramah, this focus in it being received on the time of Purim. And it certainly would seem that everybody would agree that you can't get there too late. If you get there after the Suda, so then that would seem to create a problem according to everybody. But there is an interesting shuva of the Kajig Lover Rav. The Kajig Lover Rav had two striking attributes in his shuvas. One is he has a tremendous creativity, and the other is that he often was down the chaschus, he often looked to justify the practices that Jews had and Jews have. So he has a shuva along those lines where he discusses, so why should it be that we sometimes find that there are people running around and delivering Shalach Manos very late in the afternoon. Not only very late in the afternoon, but sometimes later, sometimes nighttime already. It's already Purim is over, it's already Shushan Purim, it's already the next day, and you still find people are still lagging behind with the Shalach Manos. Is there any value to that? Does that at all got anything to do with Purim? So he thought maybe so. Kaddish Kol Rav thought maybe you could understand why they're doing that. Because there is a view in Halacha which seems to have a lot of support that the Suda, even though it has to start during the day of Purim, but it can continue into the night, it can continue into the next day essentially, and that's all still part of the Purim Suda. This year it's a little trickier because it's Friday, you know, so we can't really imagine that spilling over into Shabbos, even though and you say for Halacha, it's not the most unheard of thing. You know, the Mishnayos talk about people having a Suda on Friday that goes into Shabbos, but our lifestyles doesn't fit. But in theory, you have such an idea, and we're certainly when Purim's not a Friday, so then the Suda often goes into the next day, and that's considered to all be part of the Purim Suda. So working off of that, so the Kaddish Kol Rav, so it could be that people are still holding in their Purim Suda after Purim is already over. So if the purpose of Shalach Manos is to help with the Purim Suda, then if we assume that that all still counts, so then it would seem that you could help out with that Suda even after Purim is technically over, and maybe that's what's going on, if that's indeed the purpose. A friend of mine was mentioning to me recently that he wants to ask Rav Shalom Isaac, the Kaddish Kol Rav, if there's any value. He was kind of joking. Is there any value to having a Suda on the night after Shushan Purim cut in America? You'd have to put together a lot of shutas in order to see any value to that. But if you assume there's still value in continuing the night after Purim, and you assume there's a value of celebrating Shushan Purim even outside of the walled city, and you assume that there's a value of celebrating those days even during Adar Rishon, so you put all those three together, so maybe you can machmer to have a Suda the night after Shushan Purim cut. Those of us who are very machmir to get in as many suddas as possible, and then you could put together those three positions and have a sudda then. But for the most part, it's not really relevant. So here, this is the Kaddish Kol Rav Chiddush, that if you continue in the sudda Purim, and then maybe Shalach Manos is still relevant working off of that. The Aruch HaShulchan has a discussion where he gives a little Muslim shmuz to people. He says, in general, you know, Purim is a different type of yontif because there's no Issur Melacha. So in theory, one could just get up early for the Hashkama Minyan of Megillah reading and have the start of Suda later in the afternoon right before dark. And his whole day, he'll go to work and he'll have his secretary take care of the Shalach Manos, he'll have his family take care of the Shalach Manos. He's not really going to be involved in Purim so much during the day of Purim. And the Aruch HaShulchan was upset about this. He gave a little Musa Shmuz about it. He says, it's not right for a person to let his family take care of the Shalach Manos and Matanos Lev Yonim, and he should be involved also. And Rav Pesach Frank in his Sefer from Mikroi Kodesh, so he assumes that that's because he's working off of this idea that it's about Shalom Vareis, it's about making friends. So when you send gifts, you don't want them to ever think that somebody else was taking care of it for you and you weren't involved. They want to feel that you were involved. And therefore, working off of that, that's apparently how he comes to this position. And that if it's an idea of helping out with the Suda, so then it would seem you don't have to be that directly involved. But because he seems to work off this idea that it's about making friends, then he has this concern. And a related point that Post can discuss, and this is relevant to what you were mentioning earlier, so the Ksav Sofer has the tshuva, and the Ksav Sofer, you have to I can understand why he's going to follow the path of the Chassan Sofer's son. So the Chassan Sofer, his tshuva discusses something that we wouldn't recommend nowadays, but I guess in theory it can be discussed. If you want to give anonymous Shalach Manos, you're not going to recommend leaving unmarked packages outside people's houses, but in theory the concept of anonymous Shalach Manos has what to talk about it. So there it's interesting because this could really go both ways depending on which view you take. That if it's about making Shalom Vareis, so then apparently it's got to, as you were saying before, it's got to have a name on it, or else you're not going to know who to be friends with. Even though you could maybe argue that it means they'll be friends with the whole neighborhood, isn't that even better? Apparently not. Apparently they have to know somebody to focus on who to be friends with. While if it's about helping out with the food, helping out with the meals, it's a kind of a tzedakah idea. So we know that Rambam writes that it's a higher level of tzedakah if you give it honestly. So this is going to really go in opposite directions depending on which view you take. There is also a discussion that Svarim have. First of all, what is the shear for Shalach Manas? That we assume that we generally are told that Shalach Manas requires two food items to one person. That's a diuk from the Pasuk. Mishloach Manos is plural. Ishtar Yehu is singular. So therefore, you require two gifts to one person. But beyond that, what do the gifts have to be? How do the gifts, do they have to be a certain size? Do they have to be a certain value? So there's a discussion about that. First of all, we define it by, let's say, a kezias, which is a quantity relevant to defining eating. And therefore, if it's based on the suda, we might take that type of perspective. Or do we define it based on, let's say, a shavapruta, on a value-based system, because maybe it's about making people happy and there should be some type of measurable value. That itself is a question. But in the context of this discussion, there is a statement that Ritva has in his commentary from the Sefer Megillah on Dav Zayin. The Ritva notes that there are two types of situations which don't seem to work. One is if the person giving, let's say, is very wealthy, and he gives a very small gift, so then that's not going to be so effective. And vice versa. If you want to give to somebody who's very wealthy, and you give something very small, it's not going to be on his radar screen as far as even noticing it. That also is not effective. And the Rizva predates this whole discussion, but it seems to be fitting into this view more of a Manos Halevi type view, that it's about making friends, so then it has to not only be usable in the meal, it has to be something that they're going to notice. Has to be something that they're going to respect, and therefore, if it's either coming from somebody who's capable of much better, or it's going to somebody who is not going to see it because it's too small for him, so either way, that's going to not really cut it as far as the making friends concern is involved. And that Ritva is quoted in a lot of other discussions where there are gifts that you could give that in theory could be effective, but somehow don't show so much devotion on your part. So is that valuable or not? So for example, let's say there's something which for whatever reason is not kosher for you, but it's kosher for the person receiving it, either because of a sheet that you have and that they don't have, or maybe because, let's say it's some post can discuss, let's say it's Asher B'Hanah M'Drabanan, and the person who you're sending it to is a Chola, who's allowed to use an Asher B'Hanah M'Drabanan. So it's clear that it's not good for you, so you're giving it to him. So for his food, that might help, but as far as making friends, if it's clear it's not of value to you, so that's an issue where this discussion might come into play. Somebody was asking me recently, are you say Shalach Manas if you send peanuts to somebody who has a peanut allergy? So if you do it on purpose, you don't know you say anything, you're probably chayiv and does it. But if you didn't know, so if you didn't know, it's an interesting question, because on the one hand you would say, certainly for the suda, you're not really going to help them so much, but as far as making friends, you should think it's a thought that counts. But it's just interesting that you find a lot of this literature that seems to be working off of that perspective and talk about, let's say you send a chicken and it turns out it's a trefa. So they seem to assume that even if you meant well, but it's not usable, that that's also not going to be something that's going to delight them too much. So that's a discussion that you find as well. There's also a discussion that Rama writes that you should not send to an other. So why should you not send to an other? So some understand that it's because since it's part of the Suda, so it's like you're all having one big Suda together, so therefore it's a Sudas Mareis type of issue. In fact, there are some who say it's really a kind of a third view that's related. The Rambam maybe sounds like this a little bit, that maybe that's really the idea of Shalach Manas, that it's really kind of the other way around, that it's a way of extending your suda to everybody else. So you can't have everyone over your house, but you can take a doggy bag, so to speak, and send them out to your neighbors. So it's as if you kind of included them all in your big suda, so maybe it's a Sudas Mareis type of idea. So some understand that that's the reason why you shouldn't send to an other. But I always point out that that's not the Ramah's view anyway. The Ramah doesn't think that it's about the Suda. The Ramah thinks it's about the Shalom Reyes, according to this whole process so far. So I'll just say, yeah, that's the issue with the prohibition of Shaila Shalom. So basically what it is, it's a big hello. You send in somebody a big active greeting, and maybe that's inappropriate during Avelis for that reason. It's a related suggestion that's out there. There's another issue that's relevant specifically this year, as we, I think we touched upon a few minutes ago. So normally Purim can't fall out on Shabbos, at least in the way we observe Purim. Purim, as far as the unwalled cities, where it's observed on the 14th of Adar, so nowadays our calendar is set up that Purim doesn't ever fall out on the 14th. The 14th of Adar never falls out on Shabbos. But the 15th of Adar can fall out on Shabbos, and indeed this year it does. So if you're in Yerushalayim, so you have a what's known as a Purim Mishalosh, so a triple Purim, because there are some mitzvos which can be observed on Shabbos, and there are some which cannot and therefore are pushed up to Friday, and there are some which cannot and therefore are pushed back to Sunday, which is a whole discussion in itself, how each one gets laid out. Maybe we could talk about it a little bit. It's an interesting topic of itself. But because of that division, so you essentially have this three-day extravaganza of triple Purim, and that's why it's called the Purim Mishalosh. So the whole discussion, what do you do with Shalach Manas, what do you do with each mitzvah? So some of the Rishonim write, and Meiri talks about this, that the Shalach Manas has to be calibrated to the Suda, because if you assume that it's there for the Suda, so then it's got to be there in order to help out with the Suda. But if it's about making friends, so then you might understand that it's not necessarily so crucial. There's also it's an interesting discussion that you find in some svarim that there's an attitude that maybe you should be able to send Divrei Torah for Shalach Manas. You probably heard a discussion that comes up sometimes in reference to Shalach Shudas. There's a view that you could be Yotzei Shalach Shudas with a Sichel Torah. There's a famous quotation from Chaim Brisker, who didn't recommend it, said it's not a good strategy because maybe you could slug up the Dvar Torah and then it won't be any good, and you can't slug up Gefilte Fish. He's quoted as saying. So do we say that Divrei Torah should be effective for Shalach Manas? So either you could say like this whole Shalach Shudas idea because there's some comparison to food, and maybe that's what it's about. But it certainly makes more sense according to the Ramah, because maybe the idea is making friends. So Talmud Chachamim will make friends by sending out Divrei Torah. It's interesting to note that both the Ramah and the Manos Halevi, who he seems to be lined up with, both of them did this practically. They both wrote Svarim that, according to legend, they sent out for the purposes of Shalach Manas. The Manos Halevi itself was apparently a sefer that he sent out for Shalach Manas. And the Ramah also wrote a sefer, a fascinating sefer called Mechir Yayin, where he darshans every word literally of the Megillah, Vayhi, the drashan, Vayhi, Jimei, drashan, Jimei, darshans the entire Megillah, every word. And the story has it that he sent that out as Shalach Manas, apparently following his view that the Divrei Torah could be effective for this purpose. So I'm posting to talk about this, right? I think the whole discussion is a perm joke. It can't be that you could have Shalach Manas through the Divrei Torah. Another issue that they raised, I think, another issue that's discussed in postkin that other postkin think was a joke, I'm not sure, is because there's some discussion, can you give Shalach Manas to your Rebbe? Because the Pasuk says, Isha Reyehu, so sometimes you find Reyehu excludes your Rebbe. It has to be a parallel relationship, a peer, not a Rebbe. Others thought, they thought that was a joke, they used that language. And say, you know, the Pasuk says, Ki Yigaf Shoreyehu, so you say that if your ox scores your Rebbe's ox, your putter, the word's not always used in the same setting. But it's two chuvas like that, where they say, and the whole discussion must be a firm joke. So about that and about this, some posts can discuss it, other posts come aren't sure whether those posts were serious. In any case, you find a number of other discussions which probably relate to this point as well, and many other discussions that seem to relate to this point. Among them, also the post can talk about the question of whether you can be Yotzei, well, whether it is, why it is that we'd always had a bracha on Shalach Manas. This is a mitzvah, so why do we not recite a bracha? We recite a bracha on Megillah, so why don't we recite a bracha on Shalach Manas? So there are a number of approaches. I think we've mentioned in the past, in general, if any time discussion about any mitzvah, why there's no bracha on it, so there's a certain protocol of which Mar Makom was come up first. So it was always first the Tshuvas HaRashba. The Tshuvas HaRashba and from the Yitzchak. So he has a principle there, which is interpreted the following way. It may not be what he means, but he seems to be saying, in the context of tzedakah, why is it we don't make a bracha on tzedakah? Because, again, this is interpretation, it's not exactly what he says, that we're concerned that since you need somebody else to be involved, so maybe if you're going to offer the tzedakah, you make a bracha and you offer the tzedakah, and then the other person is going to say that he doesn't want it. So you're going to be left hanging. You know, you've heard that joke about Brisker, who's walking around Eretz Yisrael, and an Arab came up to him and was about to kill him. And so he said, okay, first I'm going to make a bracha. I made a bracha. Shirk Yishev Tav Sivanu, I'll to die, I'll kill Hashem. And the Arab got freaked out by that and ran away before doing anything. So Brisker ran after him and said, bracha batala. So it sounds like from the Rashba that's what you're concerned about, that any time there's somebody else who needs participation, they can leave you hanging and then you're gonna be stuck. So, again, we'll talk about what that's what he meant, but so based on that, so there's a discussion some Sfarim have. So if that's the reason why we sometimes don't make brachos on mitzvot, so based on that, then we should make a bracha on Shach Manas, because the Ramah, who started this whole story, the Ramah says that the other person can't stop you. If the other person is mochel, you're still going to be yotze. So you don't have to actually give it. So if that's the case, your mitzvah seems to be pretty well protected. Shouldn't be subject to the other person not wanting it. Now, first of all, it's not totally true, because the Ramah says that if the person is mochel, what if the person says, you're Shach Manas, I don't want you, stay out of my house, don't come anywhere near me. So it's not so clear that you are Yotzei Shach Manas that way, because then you're not making any friends. He just said that if the person is mochel, he says, thank you, but you can keep it. But if the person throws it back in your face, it's not so clear that you'd be Yotzei even according to the Ramah. So it's a little bit of a questionable assumption to say that you're invulnerable to the other person's rejecting you. But let's assume that that's the case. So some say, so if that's really true, so then how do you explain this? So it could be that that's not even what the Rashba meant. It could be that the Rashba, as many Svarim explain this, we saw recently, gave a shiur a few months ago on Bika Cholim, so we have to give it again. I just saw a new sefer came out on Bika Cholim, a 500-page sefer, talks about everything, so we have to revisit the whole topic. So the first very beginning of the sefer, in the third piece there, he has a whole discussion about why there's no bracha on Bika Cholim. So he spends a lot of time on this Rashba, and he makes the point that it's a misunderstanding that people have that the Rashba necessarily is worried that the other person is going to say no. It doesn't necessarily mean that that's the case. There are a lot of cases where that's not going to be an issue. He just says as a principle, any mitzvah that's not up to you, that's not done by you by yourself, any mitzvah that involves somebody else is not something you make a bracha. So if that's the case, Shriyesh, I think, also makes that point here. Also, if that's the case, then that could be why there's no bracha in Shalach Manas. Now, there are other suggestions. If you're talking about in general why there's no bracha, so you always start with the Rashba. If that doesn't help you, the second source that always comes up is the Beis Yosef in Hilchos Pesach. In Tach Lamed Beis, the Beis Yosef says, why is it that you don't make a bracha on, why is it that you make a bracha specifically on Bir Chametz and not on Bedikas Chametz? So it's because Bedikas Chametz, which is really about Bipul Chametz, so Bipul Chametz is something you can do mentally. And any mitzvah that takes place belayf, so you don't make a bracha on that. So if that's the case, so then here too, if you want to take a manasalevi type view, that it's about the fulfillment of the mitzvah comes in engendering a certain mood and creating a shalom v'reish, so then you're not going to make a bracha on that because the fulfillment of the mitzvah is really belayf. That could be. The Das Sofer, who's another descendant of the Chassam Sofer, in his Tshuvah, he has an interesting suggestion that he says if you work off the idea like the Tshuvah Sadeshin, that it's essentially a type of tzedakah, so that's interesting. Really what it means is that we have two mitzvahs of Perm, two of the four mitzvahs are really tzedakah oriented. We really have Matanos Levyonim and Shalach Manas, so essentially the same type of thing. It's just that Matanos Levyonim is money and Shalach Manas is food. But also a difference that's more subtle is that Matanos Lavyonim is given overtly to people who are needy and who are identifiable as needy, while Mishloach Manos is the same purpose, but it's less obvious. It's meant to be less obvious, so it's not going to start off not to embarrass the people who need it and who don't want to admit it. So really, essentially, they're one mitzvah, but we kind of want to hide that part. We don't want to call attention to that fact so as not to embarrass anyone. So what the bracha is going to be on these mitzvahs, really we're trying to blur them, so the bracha itself is going to contain a reference to which mitzvah it is, so that's going to undermine the whole purpose of the mitzvah. An interesting creative idea. And others suggest that maybe there's something inconsistent, that if the whole idea of making a whole idea of Shalach Manos is to make friends, so then it's going to be a little bit inconsistent. You're going to show up at somebody's house and knock on the door and you'll say, "Hi, how are you? Hold on one second. Blessed is God who commanded me and ordered me and forced me to give you this gift." That's not going to be so impressive. So that's going to undermine the whole purpose of Shalach Manos, and maybe that's not really what we're going for, which is related. There's another topic which they also draw from this Ritva that we mentioned before. It's a result in the Sefer Mishnah Shavit, the whole discussion about this, that we find the Gemara tells us in Baba Basra and in Ksubas that sometimes there are certain stuckers that we assume are mandatory, and that society, the community, compels, kofen al stucker, society can force people to get stucker. So can they force Shalach Manos also? So he thought it depends on the same issue, that if it's the purposes of stocker. So yeah, you could say it was mandatory that everyone's going to make sure everyone else's food is taken care of. We're going to compel that. But if it's about making friends, so again, it's a little bit incongruous when you show up at the person's house with the U.S. Marshals on either side of you in handcuffs, forcing you to turn over the gift. It's not going to have the greatest impression. So maybe, again, if that's the purpose, so then maybe it's not going to have so much of an effect. And we'll just mention one more point, and then we'll wrap it up. It's an interesting observation that Rabbi Shlomo Wardensleep quotes in one of his Sfarim from Rabbi Nachum Zemba, that the Gemara says in the Sachas Megillah and Daf Yudalid, so the Gemara says, what was wrong with the Jews at that time? What did the Jews do so terrible that the Jews deserved the whole episode of Purim? Why did the Jews at that time deserve to be almost destroyed? What was so terrible? So the Gemara has two approaches. One approach is because they partook in the Suda of Achashverosh, where, as we know, the food was kosher, but there was also a lot of inappropriate things that were taking place. Or the other answer the Gemara has is Mithnei Shenishtacha V'Lutzalim, because they bowed down to Haman's Avodah Zarah, and that's what did it. Even though it wasn't actually Avodah Zarah, the Gemara says they didn't actually die, so it kind of works out. So either it's because of the Sudas Achazeres, or it's because of this quasi-idolatrous activity. So Nachum Zemba suggested that both of the reasons that we have for Shalach Manos correspond to these two ideas, that if it's about the inappropriate Suda of Achashverosh, so therefore how do you fix that? You fix that with appropriate Suda. You should have a Suda of Smitzvah which will undo the negative Suda of Achashverosh. And if it's about Avodah Zarah, so how do you fix Avodah Zarah? So the Medrash says in Parshas Tzav that Gadol HaSalom, the Shalom is very powerful, that if the Jews can make one group, if they can get along, so then even if they were involved in idolatry, so Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to forgive them. So what's the tikkun for Avodah Zarah? The tikkun is to be ma'arav shalom v'reish, so that if Shalach Manos is able to accomplish that, then that should be a tikkun for the other possible sources of the problem of Purim, and together the two goals of Shalach Manos accomplish these two ideas. And we'll stop there just to quickly review what we spoke about. So we mentioned the fact that there is this question as to what is the purpose of Shalach Manos, and that the discussion was prompted by the Ramah, who writes that if one is mochel, if the recipient is mochel, so the person who is going to send it is Yotzei, and everyone said, is that really true? So from Sofer thought it depends on these two possibilities, from the suggestion that's there for the Suda, in which case Mechila shouldn't work because the whole thing will fall apart, or he wants to leave it as there to make friends, in which case maybe it's the thought that counts. And that should also affect the question of a married woman, and Chansof himself raises that issue. He mentioned that Boise Deutsch and his Chubas Prihashad thought the whole thing was a little bit exaggerated. It's not really much of a machlokas, but everyone else seemed to think that it was. and that the issue of using a shliach for Shalach Manas, which the Bnei Yishein discussed, was based on the Ran, which seemed to be independent of this, but the Sabbath Rav thought, no, that a shliach shows more forethought, so therefore, in order to make friends, it's going to be more effective. And then we talked also about the Ramah's ruling that the Shalach Manas have to get there during the day, not during the night before, which seems to reflect his view that it's there to make friends, so the receiving has to take place on Purim. If it's there for the Sud, it should be okay if it got there the night before, or even before Purim completely. And there was a discussion also in regards to the 14th and 15th, the Hekdev brings into the discussion. And the Kajik Lava Rav has an extra detail that if it even gets there after Purim, but when the Suddhas were going on, so that might be considered viable for the Suddhas, that might work for the Chumash Hadashin's view. And then we talked about the Erech HaShulchan, who says you should let your family do all the work, get involved also, which seems to be taking a Manas Halevi type of view. And we discussed the Kesav Sof about giving anonymous HaShulchanis, that if it's about Stachos, so anonymous is better, but if it's about Shalom Reish, then you need an address, you need a name in order to credit. And then we talked also about the idea of, one idea I don't think you mentioned, we'll just throw in now, that there's also, many posts can discuss the question of giving Shalach Manas to a cotton. So, is that effective or not? So, first of all, everyone agrees right off the bat, it's gotta be dependent on the Shumas Hadash and the Manas Halevi. But how it's dependent defines fun taking the opposite views. There's some Sfarim that say that if it's about making friends, so you only make friends with people of a comparable age group, which they don't have grounds making friends with children. But if it's about the Suda, so then the kids are part of the Suda also. While the other posts can take the opposite view, but if it's about the Suda, so kids aren't really chayiv in mitzvahs, we're not chayiv in the Suda, but if it's about making friends, you can make friends with anybody, so it works. So everyone agrees it's got to be part of the discussion, but the application is a little bit fluid. And then discussed also the question of the shir of Shalach Manas. Is it, first of all, is it a kazayas or is it a shalapruta, which may depend on what the purpose is, and how this gets into the whole rich buzz view that something that's too small for a rich person, either as a recipient or the giver, is not going to be effective even if it's useful for the suda. Apparently it's an idea of making friends according to him, and that many later posts can discuss all kinds of scenarios where the recipient might be able to use it, but it doesn't impress him so much as far as the sender, that may perhaps not be effective based on this ritva. And I discussed also the question of the other receiving, why does the Ramah say that, and how different interpretations do this, because it's a Sudas Mareyas idea, or more likely it's a Seila Shalom idea, consistent with Ron's view until now. And then discussed the question of Purim Mishulis, and the assumption that Shalach Manas should be tied together with the Suda, working off of that position. And then I talked about the question also of whether you could use Divrei Torah. We mentioned that both the Ramah and the Manas Halevi both apparently did that, maybe the Shitas one. Some thought the discussion was a Purim joke. And then we talked about the question of whether why there's no bracha on Shalach Manas. If you said like the Rashbab, the problem is a person might not do it, might not cooperate. According to Ramah, it doesn't have to cooperate, although we said maybe that's not true, and maybe that's not what the Rashbab meant to begin with. And then discussed also the possibility that the Beis Yosef, that it's a mitzvah of the lev, because the kiyum really happens in the heart. And we mentioned also the Das Sofer, it's because we want to blur the difference between, or the connection rather, between this and Matanus Lev Yonin. And we discussed also the possibility that it doesn't work in order to make friends and say, I was Kiddushan Stav Jivanu, it's going to be a undermining of that goal. And in that light, we mentioned also a resulting discussion about whether you can force the community to give Shalach Manas or not. So if it's about stock up, well, yes, if it's about making friends, then it's going to be a little bit incongruous that way. And then we discussed also the view of Menachem Zemba that the woman quotes about how thematically the two reasons for Shalach Manas could perhaps parallel the two reasons why we have the whole crisis of Purim. The Gemara says either it's because of the Suda Vachashverish or because of the quasi-idolatry of Haman's Salem. So the two reasons are parallel here, because if it's about the bad Suda, so we fix it by having a good Suda, and if it's about the Avodah Zarah, so then the Gemara says that Shalom is able to fix even the Avera of Avodah Zarah, and that perhaps is what Shalach Manas is trying to affect. It should be a bracha that the Shalach Manas should be able to affect both souls, should be able to affect the Kedusha that we bring to our Suda, and should be able to affect Shalom and Achdus and Avana and Reyes and Manklaistel and the Tikkun for all related Averas. Thank you. Shkarach.